Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Are you somebody who's suffering from an autoimmune disease such as diabetes or have digestion issues or just trying to figure out what's going on with your body and you don't know what's happening? Well, my next guest is an expert in the field of functional medicine, which is finding the root cause of that of chronic diseases. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage and let's learn more about her and how she can help you out. See you there. I want to believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking, bottle up my intuition till it's popping out the box that I don't fit in. I want to believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today I'm joined with Dr. Maggie Yu. Welcome to the show, Dr. Yu.
Thank you, Reed. I'm happy to be here.
So as I ask everybody, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I am a functional medicine physician and MD who's been in practice and in teaching and training for 27, 28 years at this point. Boy, I just dated myself. I started out as a family medicine physician and really postpartum delivering each of my children developed diabetes and then later insulin dependent diabetes. And after the birth of each of my children developed a lot of mystery symptoms with fibromyalgia, hair loss, depression, chronic pain, neuralgia, a lot of symptoms. And at the age of 36, I developed early menopause that everyone thought I was just getting older on. And it took me a couple years of diving into alternative medicine, holistic medicine, for me to realize that no, I was not in early menopause. I just had undiagnosed autoimmune diseases of Hashimoto's, mixed connective tissue disorder, and among other things. So I started to fix myself by learning about hormones and learning about autoimmunity. I started to lower and reverse my own autoimmune issues. I started to gather a huge number of patients in the state of Oregon. We had a functional medicine clinic in the state of Oregon that I owned that had 12,000 patients, of which most of them were autoimmune related. Mm-hmm. And as I was working with patients on turning around their autoimmune issues, they started to bring me their kids. And there was an exorbitantly high amount of autism spectrum and ADD and neurodivergency in that population. And then when I looked at my own child, as he was young at that time and growing up, he was diagnosed with Asperger's level 1 as well. So I learned that there was an absolute connection between autoimmune disease and the genetics for that, linked with children and adults that are on the spectrum disorders spectrum. So that is how I came into doing what I do now. What I do now is I teach and run programs that are online that really help families and individuals dealing with these very difficult to treat diagnoses and autoimmune issues and mystery diagnoses like you were talking about with POTS and long haul that we were just talking about. I kind of eat these diagnoses for breakfast because I really have figured out a way to really treat these complex disorders at the root cause. And that's what I do. So I would say I'm a peak health strategist for people, entrepreneurs, and families.
So how did you get into working with those who are on the spectrum, though?
Well, their parents brought them to me. So I was known as the autoimmune doctor, right? Mm-hmm. So I was known as the functional medicine autoimmune doctor. And people came for me to deal with their rheumatoid arthritis, their Sjogren's, their Kress syndrome, you know, their MS, right? And I was also known as the bioidentical hormone expert. So a lot of people came to me for hormonal issues. And by the way, there's a lot of an overlap. People with hormone issues, meaning their hormones are really unstable and difficult to manage, frequently also have autoimmune disorders as well. So there was a lot of overlap. And in dealing with this population, we had 12,000 people in our clinic. They wanted us to see their kids. We were also the primary care pediatric clinic for their children. And we had an astronomically high amount of people on the spectrum. And that's how I came to have tons and tons of experience working with families and their kids on the spectrum.
Now, how did you go about reversing your own issues that you were dealing with? What was your
hormones.
Strategy?
My first strategy was hormones because that's my entree into it. Was that my early menopause? I was just told because of my blood work that Maggie, you are just getting older, and I was 36 years old. And what I realized in going out of the box and starting to learn about my own hormones and learning about what bioidentical and natural hormones were, was that there is a way utilizing herbs or bioidentical hormones to start supplementing hormones. And while that helped for a period of time, it didn't solve my problems and it kept continuing to change. So it led me to realize that there's a lot in myself and in my patients where, people that are really challenging with hormones, I realized, likely had underlying autoimmune issues. So I started to really work on what are some of the things I'm missing. It's not just about giving hormones or that, and giving hormones doesn't necessarily mean my hormones were balanced. I realized there were other core root issues involved, and that's why we have five pillars around all of this. And so I started realizing that working on food sensitivities, working on digestion, working on blood sugar, working on wounds, trauma, and those kinds of issues and movement, that I realized, wow, that's what I needed to do to turn down my own autoimmune issues, and it worked, right? And believe it or not, once I figured out I had an autoimmune issue, I turned off the trigger. For me, one of the major triggers was gluten. I stopped the gluten. Within about 6 months, my periods came back and I came out of menopause.
Wow.
And I was like, ooh, I'm onto something, right? We're treating these hormone people as hormone problems. Why aren't we uncovering that there's an underlying autoimmune issue or root causes that haven't been addressed? And when we address those, hormones can come back online. And in children, when we think about spectrum, can their neural development come back online, right? Can their focus, their attention, right? Can some of, can their sleep, can the cognitive function, can those things come back online? I'm working with a family right now with a 3-year-old who has speech delay. And just in the matter of the last 2 months of working through these root causes, number one, this kid's constipation that's been his whole lifelong problem is gone. It's gone. And then number two, dad just told me yesterday his lights are coming back on. Like his eye tracking is better, his alertness, his focus is coming back on. This isn't a 3-year-old. And I love the ability that doing what I did, dealing with autoimmune issues, and now transferring it to the autism spectrum realm, we're seeing crazy ass results coming from kids. Parents are noticing. And this is not like, nebulous. This is not nebulous. This is within a matter of a couple months. You notice the eye tracking of your child, the speech, the awareness, the focus, those things are changing. So this is kind of my roundabout way of saying through my work with hormones, then autoimmunity is how I landed up loving working with the spectrum population and their families.
Now you talk about plant-based medicine. How is that different opposed to regular medicine?
Sure. Regular medicine, when you say, well, I'm going to focus this on how is plant medicine different than, let's say, pharmaceuticals, because that could be the other topic, could be way bigger as well. It's just that I look at plants as just another way with which we use natural substances from nature. Whether that is plants from plants, many of our medicines are actually already derived from plants, just so you guys know. Like aspirin is derived from plants, that molecule. So really, when plant medicine is just using plants as medicine. And I love to expand and say we can actually also utilize food as medicine, right? And so I'm not limited to what is in a pharmacy, what's in a prescription pad, that is both. On a prescription pad, many of them are synthetic molecules, which I'm not against, but that's the difference. And some of those are derived from plants, a small percentage. And so, plants as medicine is literally utilizing plants and food as medicine.
All right. Now, you had mentioned food sensitivities. What factor in that do you f in food sensitivities do you feel affects those with ASD and ADHD?
Sure. So what I find is this, is that with spectrum disorders, what we find is that they are very high in families with autoimmune. You will find that one, both of the parents have an autoimmune issue they may not even know about. Okay, usually they don't even know about because most autoimmune diseases aren't even diagnosable. And a lot of people also have a lot of ignorance. People don't realize something like diabetes is autoimmune. People don't realize fibromyalgia is autoimmune. People don't realize that even chronic fatigue or depression and anxiety can have a major autoimmune component to it. And we were just talking about POTS, this autonomia long haul has an underlying autoimmune component to it. So the problem is that we have, at least in my estimation, 98% of autoimmune disease we are not able to diagnose. So it's, and the ones we are able to diagnose have been on a 7 to 11 fold increase over the last 60 years. So there's an epidemic rise of awareness and diagnosis and prevalence of autoimmune disease. And so kids on the spectrum typically have a family history very strongly of autoimmunity. And one of the things that I notice is this, and is that the role of gluten. Gluten is a super trigger for autoimmune disease. No matter what autoimmune disease you have, gluten is a super trigger for it. The way the gluten molecule looks, and this is a simple way of describing it, is a little human-y. So if your immune system is already attacking parts of your body as a germ, parts of your human parts as a germ, and then is attacking it and trying to kill it, when you introduce gluten, it actually triggers that auto attack against yourself because gluten, there's certain parts of that molecule, it looks a little human-y. That's a simple way of describing it. So what we're finding is then gluten, when you consume it, is a true super trigger of the attack against yourself. And so for everybody in the spectrum disorders, because of that autoimmune likelihood of attacking your own body, gluten is a super trigger. Now, that being said, are there other foods that could be, and are those individualized? And the answer is yes. So gluten is universal. But the problem is we start now having food sensitivities, meaning that certain foods is raising and making your immune system angry. And they're individual to each person. So for you, Reed, it could be broccoli or sesame along with gluten, let's say. And the problem is food sensitivities don't have an immediate crazy ass allergenic reaction that you can tie to it. So it may take hours to days for the symptom to show up. So example, when you go to an allergist, you're dealing with food allergies. That's what we call IgE, emergency big reactions, asthma, throat closes up, can't breathe, tongue swells up, right? If you have those, you're going to go see the allergist, you can be diagnosed with it, obvious. That's not what we're talking about. Food sensitivity is also allergies, but it's a different branch of your immune system. It's your IgG, IgA, they're slower and lower and not obvious. So what if it's a headache? What if it's just focus, Reed, right? And right? What if it's your focus and what if it was broccoli and sesame? How the hell are you supposed to figure that out?
We
Right?
don't
And
know.
it plays a major role in these symptoms that we're dealing with when we're talking about focus, brain development, right? Brain neural inflammation.
Now, you have a food mapping masterclass. What is entailed in that?
Sure. So a lot of people are really lost out there. If you can't go to your allergist or your GI doctor and you're on the spectrum, and yet I just told you that food really matters, and you already suspect that because you've seen it in yourself or your children, but yet you're being poo-pooed, right? And you're poo-pooed by your GI doc, by your pediatrician, by your neurologist, and then also by your allergist. How the hell are you supposed to deal with that? Well, there is a scientific way to actually test for food sensitivities, right? And there is a really bad, many bad tests out there for it. That's the problem. So what I found is that I've tested at least currently 68 different brands of food sensitivity testing, and 95% of them sucked. So when you have an allergist or a GI doc poo-poo and say, "Oh, that's all fake because all those tests suck." Well, they're kind of right that the tests suck, but it doesn't mean it's fake. So what I have figured out through all the testing and working with thousands of individuals over the last, 27 years of my career is that there are good tests. We use a good test, number one. When you have an accurate test, that's great, right? And number one, accurate testing. Number two is I have to educate parents and people about intricacies of the tests because we already have screwed up immune systems. It's hyperactive, underactive, it's already all over the place. So we're more likely to have testing results to have a bunch of like what I call noise. So we can call them false positives or false negatives. So in our program, not only do we test, but we teach parents how to understand what is the noise and what's the real data. So then we have actionable. And many of these kids, when they test, actually looks like they're allergic to everything and they're not. So I cut through that noise and say, here's exactly what you need to remove, and here's all the other foods you can introduce back in. The other part of this read is that 50% of these reactions are not even because of food sensitivities or allergies. 50% of the reactions that we see in kids and adults on the spectrum to food is because they have poor digestion. Their digestion really sucks. And over time, more and more of it sucks. So poor digestion will then turn into other diseases and symptoms like POTS, like mast cell, many other irritable bowel syndrome, other things. So what I find is I have to teach parents how to identify and fix their digestion in themselves and in their children in this program. So we test, we educate, we troubleshoot, and we get results for parents and their families. And I call it a 6-week one and done. So people go through this process, and in about 6 weeks, they get all the results they need, all the coaching and training that they need with that, so they can implement and they get results. That's what we do in my food mapping masterclass.
All right. Now I can say as someone who is autistic, I have come to learn that I'm not sure if it's, I know it's not just me out there, but I've realized that later in life, I wound up becoming not gluten intolerant, but dairy intolerant.
Correct.
With how, and which means I got to alter what I drink. I got to cut back on my cheese, eating cheese and ice cream. Because otherwise, it's almost like being a celiac. You wind up having it go right through you, and you're in the washroom all night.
But that's a really good example, Reed, where there's so many different things about dairy that you don't know about, or your doctor may not about, or you may know that's part of this what you just said. So, is he sensitive? Does he actually have a low allergy to dairy, or does he have a digestive problem with the sugars in dairy? And I love being able to tease that apart for people, because when I have the data to show, is it really a true sensitivity or not? And then we go over your symptoms and your history. I can tell you that many people have what we call lactose intolerance, meaning that they have a digestion problem where they lack the enzyme to digest the sugars in dairy. That's not an allergy,
No.
right? And if you were that individual, could you eat the dairy with a whole bunch of lactate, let's say, to digest it and then not have diarrhea? Yes. But what if you had both?
Yeah.
Right? What if you had both problems? Then you would take the lactate and you still would have the problem. So it might be a different set of symptoms. So people need to be teased apart on that. And the other issue is when we do our testing, we go through our process. What if you can't do cow dairy, but you could do goat or sheep
Yeah.
dairy? That really expands your diet and blow and light your fire.
Yeah.
For some people, yes,
Yeah, I mean,
right?
I switched from cow to oat. And that's a big change. I
Right,
cut
but it
that.
may be less of a change if you could do goat.
Never had goat milk. Don't
Right?
know where to
But
get
there's
it.
data showing that.
It'd be
But
interesting.
there's, right?
Yeah.
What if you found out you could have goat cheese or sheep cheese instead? Well, how life-changing would that be for you? How much would that add to the diversity of your diet?
It would
Huge,
change. I mean,
right? And people on the spectrum have a lot of times food aversions,
yeah.
limited diets, right? And some people are addicted literally to cheese. That's like a huge part of their diet. And then you say, no, you can't do that. Tell a 7-year-old this, right? Who loves cheese? What if we found out you could do goat cheese or sheep cheese or manchego cheese or something? I mean, that would be a night and day difference for a parent and for the person with the cow dairy sensitivity. So that's the degree of specificity and accuracy that we get into that really opens up the palate and the world and takes into context someone's also problem with texture or their focus, hyper focus on certain types of food. That all has to be part of the equation. This is how data can help.
Now, you said your son was autistic. Does he have any
Yes.
sensitivities?
He does. He actually has issues when he with dairy, with cow dairy, right?
Right.
And he obviously everybody's going to have issues with gluten. So those are two of his areas, right? Yes, he does. So there isn't a single person I work with that in this category of symptoms that don't have some sort of food sensitivity, because number one, gluten's going to be universal, but there usually is something else. But it's not everything. Like when we test for like 200, almost 280 different things, right? But we find that a lot of times a parent or a person will assume it's going to be all these things and they get almost scared of doing this. And to most people's surprise, it's way less than they thought. And most of the parents are actually reintroducing and adding more and more foods back as their kid gets better and better.
Now, I notice, I think a lot of parents are scared to go gluten free because they realize the minute you go gluten free, it gets expensive because everything that's gluten free is costly. It's very expensive, and that's, I think that's one of the factors of why they're so afraid to switch.
That's true and not true, right? If you just switch regular Oreos to gluten-free Oreos, okay, right? But at the same time, many food is naturally gluten-free that you should be eating more of, right? Why aren't we eating more protein? Why aren't we eating more vegetables, right? Why aren't, like beans are gluten-free? Like the thing that one of the major issues of why people perceive gluten-free as being so expensive, and it is, don't get me wrong, it does cost more, right? Is that they're just thinking about my kid eats so much bread, and we're just going to substitute it with gluten-free bread, right? And one of the things I think that's important and why we have programs that are really much longer to work and support families is how do we open your mind to the fact that we can actually have a whole variety of things that are adding to this kid's diet while working with their sensitivities and with their preferences or aversions, right? So there's many creative ways to do that, number one. But the other second thing is, I'm going to say this, having a sick kid is the most expensive thing in the world. Probably 10 to 100 times more expensive than being gluten-free.
Yeah,
Right?
doctors are a fortune. I mean, you're constantly taking your
Missed
kid to the
work.
doctor, and they charge you a fortune just for one little
What about
doctor
the
visit.
fact that, lost opportunity? What if the kid never gets to be able to go to school or college or have a career? Like, what is the price of that? So if I learned that by getting my kid to be able to be gluten-free and me opening my mind and knowing their food sensitivity and what I can add into this and working with this to expand his diet, and I'd have a kid who has better and better cognition, better quality of life, better mental health, what is that price worth to me and our family and to my child?
That's so true. I mean, you look at what people, I mean, I think the other factor besides the cost to gluten free is taste. A lot of people kind of factor in gluten free, a lot of times tastes like cardboard, but I've
Not
had
true.
gluten free products that are amazing. I've made gluten free brownies from Trader Joe's that were fantastic.
I know.
I mean, Trader Joe's is like one of the best places to go if you want to go gluten free.
My mac and cheese. I'm a foodie, Reed. I love to cook.
Oh,
Okay.
God rest my father, he was a foodie too. We used to say where most people go on vacation, they remember the places my dad would remember the food.
I don't miss it. I really don't. I make the best mac and cheese on the planet. I can even make the best vegan mac and cheese on the planet that's dairy free, right? I don't miss it, and I make absolutely delicious food, and I have fun making it. That's how I show my love. So it's interesting is that there's a lot of fear and trauma people have around food, a lot of assumptions. And so you're absolutely right. It can absolutely be delicious, but it's what people's assumptions really are around it. But the bottom line is this: there's nothing more expensive than a sick child,
True.
right?
Right. I mean, you look at it. I mean, if doctors weren't so more expensive, we'd be going there more often to get checked up and everything. But we'd rather have a healthy child than a sick child.
Correct. Right? And you're paying one way or another. You could pay it in the hospital, sick visits, specialty care, all this stuff, or you could pay it in the front by investing in the nutrition, right, of healing food for your child and never have to spend on the back end because you guys are all enjoying your life. How about
Yeah, I
that?
mean, what people
Are you going to pay in the front or are you going to pay in the back? Which way are you going to do this?
don't realize is, and there's been studies all over the place that is, if you eliminate the crap you eat in your life, you'll feel so much better. And people have
If you
done that.
eliminate crap in your life, how about just eliminating crap in your life?
Yeah.
If you eliminate toxic people in your life, right?
People don't realize that if you eliminate all the bad foods, all the sugars, how much energy you're going to have in the long run.
Well, the thing is this though, Reed, it's not about elimination. That's the issue for me is the whole mindset around this. People think of this as I have to eliminate all the sugar, all the bad food, but it's our perspective on this. I eat tons of delicious, wonderful food, right? That's ooey gooey wonderful and fatty as heck on and I love fat. That's the thing is I love fat. And and they're healthy. They love my body and I love it and it loves my brain and my developing self. It's this whole concept we have around like bad food versus good food. I have my gosh, so much healing food is so damn delicious, decadent and wonderful and loves me and I love it. Right? So we innately need to change our perception of what is good or bad food in so many ways.
All right. You say you're you call you say you're a functional doctor, medicine doctor. What is functional medicine?
Oh, great. Thanks for asking that question.
No
I
problem.
take I am a UCLA trained medical doctor who practiced as a family medicine doctor in my entire career. And I just added a whole ton of training on naturopathic medicine, chiropractic medicine, scientific based alternative medicine, and I added that to my practice. That's how I am a functional medicine physician. I use all those skills to help you function optimally, and that's why I call myself a peak health strategist, using all the tools. And I am not against all my MD medicine and medical training. I'm aware and I am educated on them. I utilize them if they're needed. They're just not my first and only trick. So I have many.
Now you have a podcast, I've noticed. When did
Yes.
that start and how did that start?
Yeah, so I started my YouTube channel and it's Maggie UMD 8 years ago. So Reed, interestingly, when I was a clinical practitioner, I was in a clinic as a functional medicine doctor. One of my friends challenged me to do 30 days of Facebook Live. And I had never done anything live before, and that's completely out of the box for a medical doctor who did one-on-one medicine. And so I did it. This is one of the things. This is one of my catchphrases for myself. I like to kick ass, take names, and chew bubble gum. And so when I said, okay, I'm going to do 30 days of Facebook Live, I started to do it. And those videos are still available on Facebook. And I look back and I'm like, ooh, that was a little cringy. And I caught the bug and I really enjoyed it because I was able to teach. I see me on social media and these conversations that we're having as a great equalizer out there, meaning that people can have access at their fingertip of being able to access on YouTube, on podcasts to get information and access to people in the world they never would have been able to find, talk to, or listen to in the past. So that's how it started was I caught the bug and I started my YouTube channel and I started going live regularly on my YouTube channel all the time. I just made it my thing at least once a week, at least once a week, at least once a week. And I love it because it's put me in contact with so many colleagues, specialists, people that I, would have never in my previous world of doing this have had access to. So now our Transform program, we have multiple journeys and multiple programs in there. We have a supplement company as well. We reach globally. We have clients from all around the world. I have practitioners from Canada, Australia, that are reaching out to me to talk to me about POTS, some of these really difficult to treat diagnoses, right? And they want to learn. They want to learn. So I think it's been my podcast, my YouTube channel has been, I think, the great equalizer. I've gotten so much and learned so much from it as a consumer of it, but also as someone who creates content for it. It's really opened my world and it's accessed me to other people and them to me in a whole new way.
Well, I take it then your blog came right after that then.
Exactly. So I'm a prolific content producer. I love to create content. That's how my brain works. I'm a creator. And the level of curiosity and creation that I have is huge. And interestingly, I just published my book and it came out about 3, 4 months ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. 8 out-of-the-box ways to transform your health. And it just hit seven on Amazon, number one bestseller in 7 different categories internationally.
Wow.
And I had never thought author would be the other way to be able to reach so many people, right? So that's the other thing was like recognizing the written word, as well as spoken, as well as video, are all different ways with which I love to teach. And I'm also going to offer everybody on this podcast that is listening in your audience a free copy of the book. So if you guys go to 8outofthebox.com, the number 8outofthebox.com, get you, it's my gift to the audience. You can get a free copy of my book. And in there, the first chapter is guess what, Reed?
Food sensitivities.
Nope. Leading with curiosity. And that's what I led with. That's was what started my YouTube channel 8 years later and my podcast. And that's why on YouTube currently, I think we're almost at 1,400 videos. I want to hit 2,000 by the end of, within the next 18 months, I want to hit 2,000 videos on there and podcasts. I want to get that number up.
As we all do as podcasters and YouTubers alike. I mean, my show hit, I'm at over 20, I switch podcast hosts, and I'm about over 20,000 downloads audio wise and over 200 subscribers video wise.
Boom.
And whoever thought that I would reach out to people, I mean,
Well, Reid, if you create good content and you truly serve people, they will come.
I mean, I don't, I've, this is a story I've not really shared much on. My very first time putting up stuff, one day I'm going through my blog, which I post my shows on, and I get this message, and it's from a kid, and he's like, "Hi, my name is so and so. I have Asperger's. I'm also dealing with level 3 liver cancer, but I'm not here to talk about me. I want to talk about my sister, who's also autistic, but my father and his family won't let her out to see the outside world. I want to relay everything I've learned from you to them and saying, hey, the world is not a dangerous place if you let it, if you don't let it be. And I just want to thank you for all you've done.
I think this is about psychological safety, and it's a conversation I love because this is a part of my own healing journey that I would say in the last year, really thought a lot about is how can I provide more and more psychological safety for myself with me? That started first there. And then how do I expand it? And it relates to my relationship with my partner as well, which was I made the commitment about a year ago that I was going to be his ultimate psychological safety. And I wasn't before. I wasn't before. And it has really healed myself and him. And it's really changed our relationship so much, right? And then I really thought about, what about the psychological safety of the workplace? Right? I want to run a company and own a company where everybody feels like they have psychological safety. Because really, ultimately, this is what the world needs. We need to feel like that there's a bigger and bigger and bigger safety net for us to be ourselves.
Now,
We are safe.
what is your process of helping those reverse of some of their own problems like depression? What do you, how do you, what do you go through? What do you walk them through to help them realize?
Yeah, some of the tools. This is so fun, okay? And if there are any parents out there listening, like this is where you want to take down some notes. I'm just gonna list some of the things that we do that are completely missing, and I think it's asinine that it's missing in the care for children or adults with this. Number one is hormones. There's developing brains need to have hormonal balance at every age. At every age. And it is shocking to me how many of people have not had a thorough hormonal evaluation by a practitioner who actually knows these patterns that are tied with these developmental issues. So I find that a lot of parents or adults, like men, let's say, Reed, you go to your doctor and you ask to test for hormones. Number one, you're going to be poo-pooed. Number two, they're going to actually put some shame on you as if, like, are you trying to body build, Reed? You know, or you got erectile dysfunction, like it's the barriers against normal individuals or individuals with any chronic health symptom going to ask for hormone testing is ridiculous and asinine, and honestly, medical gaslighting. Okay, so problem is getting tested, and we have practitioners who are resistant, labeling, shaming, creating a place of psychological, honestly, nightmarish. It's a house of horrors that you have to walk into to get it. And then once you get the hormones, number one, did they even do it the right way? Number two, did they do it at the right time? Number three, did they even know the patterns? Meaning you look at these different hormones and how, what is the story they're telling? But instead, parents and people are being told, oh, it's in the normal range, you're fine, you don't have a problem. Makes me ill, right? So get hormones, getting proper hormone testing, getting yourself educated on what hormone balance is and what those patterns are, and implementing with food, with lifestyle, with plant medicine. And sometimes we do need to help the hormones out a bit, right? All those tools being available is what's critically needed. And that's what I do. And that's why we have several programs that deal with hormone balancing. One of them is my hormone masterclass, right? But we have programs to support families with kids with these hormonal issues. I haven't met a kid with the symptoms of whether it's level one, two, or three Asperger's, for example, who didn't have some major hormonal disturbance somewhere, some way, somehow that they were told they didn't have a problem with, right? So hormone balancing, number one, right? Number two, food sensitivities, really critical. And that includes not just food sensitivity, but a thorough evaluation and fixing of the digestion problems. Okay, I haven't met a kid who didn't have a digestion issue with this. And I know, Reed, you have a digestion issue, whether you know it or not. Okay? And it's not like, it's not woo-woo, it's science. So fixing that. The other aspect that we work with, many other aspects, would be because we have digestion issues, food sensitivities, people will have a lot of absorption problems in their gut. And so a lot of the vitamins, minerals, amount of protein, fat in their body is really disturbed. And so you can't have healthy brain development if there isn't a good balance of these healthy fats and proteins along with the carbohydrate that we're eating. So those are just some of the things that we do. But again, these are journeys, right, of different things. It's not a, oh, take this vitamin and you're fixed, right? Functional medicine is like a lot of people. The way that we receive care in the regular medical doctor's office is the pill is to fix this problem. That pill is to fix this problem. But it doesn't. That's a problem. It doesn't. And when you were dealing with something complex like spectrum, right? You know, like ASD, for example, like these things are all playing together. So it's not gonna be one pill is gonna fix this. It's not gonna be one plant is gonna fix this or that. It's actually a big, it's a it it is a integrated functional thing that we have to fix. Right, so those are some of the methods, and that's why when you look at the chapters of the book, the first chapter I have is Leading with Curiosity. The next chapter I have is Digestion. It's the first domino, right? People don't realize how much digestion in their baby has turned into escalating levels of symptoms with ASD. So that's why it's the first domino, and there's an order with which not only do you have to do the right things, but order really matters. Doing the right thing at the wrong time, still the wrong thing. So I really think I like looking at it strategically to say what's the right order with which we have to approach these issues.
Now, what do you feel some of the most common issues are with those with ASD and ADHD related to food sensitivities?
Sure. Number one is they don't realize they have to be off gluten, right? And they don't understand food sensitivity, or they don't understand how, you know, these disorders are linked with reactivity to gluten, right, and gluten intolerance. Lack of understanding and awareness that gluten is really a neurotoxin in this population. I think that's one major hurdle. And it's the ignorance of the doctors that they deal with. The other second part of this is that there is no medical treatment, There really, from the regular medical doctor, there isn't one pill that can give you to fix this. So it's almost dealt with as poor you. There's not much that we can do as a medical establishment for this. That's a fix. So it's almost like I feel like people don't understand there are all these opportunities and timelines for an interruption. We can interrupt this timeline and we can have a whole new timeline for this child or this person's development and quality of life. So it's almost like the mindset that they don't realize I can jump the line, I can have a different timeline, different sets of interventions and tools to deal with this. So that's the other problem, is just our whole medical approach to it, and also how we've been medically gaslit as parents into thinking that there is no other timeline and no other way of intervening.
No. Now, you mentioned transform. What is the transform protocol?
What I just described, and I have actually a five pillars training around this. Maybe we can tag the audience in it, and I can share the link where I go over. There are five pillars. So when I look at the pillars of transform, what does it take for people to transform through these problems, whatever it is, right? The five pillars are, number one is blood sugar. There's a lot of blood sugar instability in this population that's triggered by hormonal issues. Number two, right, is food sensitivities. We call that whole process food mapping. That's missing. Number three, nutrient density. Like, what is the amount of density in their body of these nutrients that they need for their brain and their bodies, right? Number four, hormone imbalances. And then number five is gut health. Like, people talk about all this leaky gut issues relating to it. So these are the pillars that we have to deal with and transform. And doing these things in the right order is also really critical. And that's why it's important for people to talk to us, because how we approach this needs to be individualized to each person based on where they're at, whether it's an adult, whether it's a child, and also people's level of receptivity on which journey do you want to jump in? How fast do you want to get results? How much time do you want to invest into this? How much do you want to do on your own? How much do you want us to help you and be engaged with you? How much community support do you need? So those are the pieces that really are the levers between how fast someone can get results and what kind of results they're looking for. That's our transform protocol. And in our programs, we have four different types of journeys that people can choose to go on that helps them turn this around.
And finally, where can people find out more about you and what you do?
Sure. You could go to my YouTube channel. It's Maggie UMD. Yeah, I'm on Instagram as well. And on Facebook, we are on website, we have drmaggieu.com as well. And we have a Facebook group that's over 100,000 people strong, and it's called Transform Your Health Naturally with Maggie UMD. So you can join our Facebook group. We have 100,000 people in there. And the best way to quickly get in contact with us, I would say, is just go to maggieu.com. There's a way to chat with our team, or book a chat call with one of our members of our team. We're able to talk to you and learn more about you.
And that's it, everyone. That was Dr. Maggie Yu. I'm Reed Miles, and I'll see you on the next one. See you there. Thank you, Maggie.
You're welcome.